This is the Vinyl Garage.
And a one, and a two. There's a place where I can go, and that's where I wanna be. I'm saying goodbye to you good people, for I found a place for me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gonna go way out,
way out.
That's where the fun is, way out,
way out.
That's where the sun is, way out.
Welcome to the Vinyl Garage. I'm Dave Nelson, your host, and for the next 60 minutes, we'll explore the history of rock and roll from a vinyl point of view. In a world where B-sides and album cuts predominate, along with, at times, some not-so-subtle commentary, involving everything from the blues of the 30s to today's newest releases. We've been tasked with a massive responsibility, the origins of the music we love. So let's get started. Last week, we wrapped up the year 1967 in the Ohio homegrown history of rock and roll. But one band from that year was conspicuous in its absence, the Baskerville Hounds, allowing us this week to devote an entire show to their story and music. I had the opportunity to sit down with founding hound, lead guitarist, and sometime lead singer Larry Meese, who will help me tell the story. I asked Larry how it all came to be.
Originally, we were called the Majestics, and it started with me playing guitar at John Marshall High School for a folk group. Actually, we all went to John Marshall High School. We're all from the West Park area. Grew up between West 130th, West 140th in Cleveland, Ohio. The original formation of the Majestics was myself, Doug McCutcheon, Bill Emery, who played violin at the time but was willing to play the bass, which I taught him after a while, and he picked up pretty quick. Then there was another man named John Thacker, who was a rhythm guitar player, and of course Johnny Kirkpatrick, our main drummer. After a while, John Thacker left the group, and we became the four of us playing all over, from high schools, dance halls, wherever we could get a job, and sometimes play for free. We played at VA hospital called Cryo Hospital at the time in April of 64. And there's a couple songs there recorded on a Webcore reel-to-reel of One Mint Julep and also Rock and Roll Waltz, I believe.
And 53 years later, thanks to the Hounds' personal archives, here's the boys from April 1964 with the Ray Charles cut One Mint Julep and a faster rocked-up cover of K-Star's Rock and Roll Waltz. Thankfully, a surprisingly good quality record.
Thank you.
at any rate, we played all over, and then we went to the Westtown Lounge on West 25th and Denison. Denison and West 25th, that area, that's where it was happening. We played there on Friday and Saturday nights, and for hardly no money because we had to rent a Hammond B3 and lug that sucker in for Doug, but it was fun.
Here's a short surviving snippet of that song recorded at Westtown. A cover of Bill Doggett's Rambunctious. The boys rocked it up a bit, replacing the lead sax in the original with Doug's B3.
A group that we went out and heard one time, Doug and I think John Kirkpatrick, called the Grasshoppers. They were at the Euclid Beach Dance Hall, opening up for Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas, and we kind of liked that. We said, hey, these guys, we can do that. Dante Rossi was a rhythm guitar player with the Grasshoppers, and he eventually left the Grasshoppers looking for another band. He had heard about us and came down to hear us at the Westtown Lounge. Well, after he heard us, he was really interested. He couldn't believe the sound, as he said, that we gave for four guys, and he wanted to be part of the group. He told us of his connections with WHK, that he had friends, disc jockey named Emperor Joe Mayer, Scott Burton. So we came in and we formed. We went to East 55th and Prospect, the original WHK studios. I don't know if it's still there, is it? Set up our equipment and did some songs. And all of a sudden, Scott Burton and Eggs, Johnny Holiday, Emperor Joe Mayer, Ron Britton, and I don't know who else was there, came into the room and heard us and said, hey, you guys, you want to be our house band? But at any rate, we ended up opening up for some major acts, you know. The Rolling Stones, of course, being number one. Sonny and Cher, the Beach Boys. When we started playing for WHK, they said, well, you got to record. If you're going to record, you have to record originals. So Doug and I both wrote a song. Doug wrote Hurtin' Kind, and I wrote Mine Forever. And that was our first record, and it went really good. Hurtin' Kind was the A side. It had the beat. My side, Mine Forever, I'm good with that. I was on the B side.
You're the hurting kind. Always messing around, out doing it down with some other guy. All I do while you out having fun is sit and cry. Feel so bad, cause you're making me sad. I have to leave cause I just can't stand this grief. But I don't want you, cause you're the hurting kind.
You're the hurting kind.
Continues with the origins of the name Tulu Babies and Baskerville Hounds.
We were called the Tulu Babies because Ron Britton took us over, and that was one of his little cliches or whatever you would say. He would say, my Tulu Babies, my Chico Buddies, and WHK started to think, well, they're getting free publicity. We were playing it all over, so many venues, that they didn't like the amount of publicity we were getting for free ad. So they said, well, you're going to have to change your name. And at that time, Scott Burton introduced us to Jim Testa. Jim Testa came up with the word the Baskerville Hounds because of the fact that it was a British invasion. And at one point, we were trying to, you know, emulate the British look with the long hair, the same suits and stuff.
The band recorded on Testa's Tema label as the Tulu Babies. The first two singles, the aforementioned Hurtin' Kind, Back With Mine Forever, was followed up shortly by a Jim Testa original A-side, Debbie, with Larry's Although I Was to Blame on the flip. The latter would be reissued again on Tema as a Baskerville Hound single, and yet another time in 1967 on Dot with a different B-side, Jackie's Theme, a cut taken from their Space Rock Part 2 LP. The Jackie reference was Jack Topper, the keyboardist on the above album.
So tired, and Debbie,
next, the single that really got them noticed, Space Rock. Here's Larry relating the song's origin and how the intended title differed from what ultimately appeared on the record. The history of one of Cleveland's biggest singles, straight from the hound's mouth.
Scott Burton gave us all a promotional copy of 12x5 by the Rolling Stones. He said, this is the group that you're going to be opening up for. While we played this album, we used a lot of the songs from Confessing the Blues to Round and Round, and we started to play It's All Over Now at our gigs. There was a song on it called 2120 South Michigan Avenue. Well, one time I came to practice and I said, why don't we learn this song as a break song? But to make it longer, we said, let's put a drum solo in it because it sounded good. So we used that for months until finally someone said, why don't you record it? So we recorded it. It was supposed to have been called Spacewalk, and there was a typo, and it came out Space Rock. So we said, fine, leave it that way, because we had so many records already printed. Here is a song called Space Rock, lead vocal in there where I say, yeah. Ah!
Space Rock Part 2, which we just heard, was the B, with Part 1 the plug side. So, what was the difference? Part 1 included some Sputnik-like satellite sound effects. Here's original Hounds bassist Bill Emery.
Back in 1965, we didn't have a whole lot of sound effects available in the studios. We had to make up something that sounded sort of like the Telstar sound that the Tornadoes came up with. A reverb unit in the AC30 box amplifier. We kind of shook that from time to time whenever we wanted to interject that into the sound. That's basically what we did. We thought it was a big deal.
In addition, Part 1 featured different shouts and yells, ran 7 seconds longer, and was a completely different take. Larry relates another facet of the recording.
Johnny Kirkpatrick's drum pedal fell off during the recording of Space Rock Part 2. Studio time was precious, so we just kept going, and the result was Bill's bass line came through stronger, and that became the drive in the song, and that's the reason why Part 2 was chosen over Part 1.
Wow. The next Tima single was a Testapen Christmas record, Christmas Is Here. Along with a picture sleeve showcasing the boys at their angelic best, the song featured some unorthodox instruments for the hounds. A hammer-struck chime and an instrument Bill knows well.
I was a classically trained violinist for several years. I studied for about 10 years prior to getting into rock and roll. We decided to make this Christmas record. Really had no idea what we were getting into, but I said, bring your violin and we'll figure something out in the studio. So that's what we did. And was given some things to play by ear. It turned out, I thought, pretty well, considering everything was really clean on the tracks. And I think it was one of the better engineered songs that we recorded over the years. Unfortunately, we didn't get a whole lot of airplay, being a seasonal record. Kind of proud about that.
Snowflakes falling on a windowpane. Children laughing everywhere. Shoppers racing from store to store, crying for someone to hear.
Baskerville Hounds here on the Vinyl Garage.
Make me your man.
Make Me Your Man found its way onto the B-side of the Christmas record, along with another upcoming single and the Dot LP in 1967. An obvious nod to the Rolling Stones, the song, in my opinion, was strong enough to justify an A-side. That never happened. Bill Emery on lead vocals. Larry on the next single finally scored an A-side, 1966's All You Had to Do Is Ask, backed with Doug's Who Does She Love. Larry on lead vocal on the A-side, along with Bill doing harmony, and Johnny Kilpatrick, the drummer, got lead duties on the B-side. Sadly, John passed away November 10th, 2015.
Yeah.
aforementioned single chosen to host as its B-side, Make Me Your Man, was Here I Come Miami. Their manager, Jim Testa, penned cut that I'll kindly describe as very reminiscent of Marvin Gaye's Hitchhike. The song is slightly biographical since they were on their way to Miami, Fort Lauderdale to play some gigs. While there, the band recorded the song at Criteria Studios. Album in 1967 was, in part, thanks to the popularity of the space rock single, taking a predominant place in the album's title. The LP featured 11 cuts in addition to the aforementioned, 3 were recycled from singles we've already heard, 3 were covers, and 5 were new and exclusive to the LP. Here's Larry with the official rundown.
Testa got a deal with Dot Records, I don't know how, and he picked all the songs. And filler songs and everything else, but we also had some originals put on there. Of course, Space Rock Part 2, the elongated version of it. Make Me Your Man, and I wrote Can't Take It, Although I Was to Blame, which was the B-side of Debbie, I believe. And Doug had Sad Eyed Lady. There were the fillers of Never on Sunday and Penny Lane, and I'm a Believer, that was a filler. Baby Am I Losing, Testa wrote that. It wasn't a bad song. I wrote Please Say. Jackie's Theme was also written by Jack Topper, by the way.
Here's Larry's Can't Take It and Doug's Sad-Eyed Lady. Check out the way cool fuzz guitar on Doug's contribution.
I can't take it now. you should be laughing. Hey, he said goodbye.
He said goodbye.
Be glad that it happened. You've learned the hard way not to say please. Said I, lady. Said I, lady. Now listen to me, baby. Yeah. Why are you sad?
'67 and the album marked the beginning of some lineup changes, all because of the draft. Larry explains.
Well, the album had different players. Three of us were able to get into the National Guard. Unfortunately, Johnny Kirkpatrick, our drummer, got drafted and went to Vietnam, which brought in Mike Macron on drums, until National Guard took Bill Emery out for his active duty of 6 months, which brought in Tom Evans, and Jack Topper replaced Doug McCutcheon, who also had to go in for active duty. So we recorded this album with Jack Topper on keyboards, Mike Macron on drums, and they had to fill some big shoes, like the album says.
The remaining originals from the LP were a Jack Topper instrumental, Jackie's Theme, a song we mentioned earlier in the show, as the B-side to the Dot single, Debbie. Baby Am I Losing, a Jim Testa pen cut credited to DJ Kohler, his wife's maiden name, and Larry's Please Say.
Thank you. pretend? Tell me, baby, tell me, is this the end? Tell me, is it true? There's someone new. I've got to know just what to do. Baby, am I losing? Baby, am I losing? Baby, am I losing you? Baby, am I losing you?
LP featured three covers described by Larry as fillers. The Monkees' I'm a Believer, the Beatles' Penny Lane, and the easy-listening Academy Award-winning song from 1960, Never on Sunday. It seems strange that Dot would go to the expense of licensing the first two when the Tulu Babies' Hurting Kind single could have been used in its stead. But I'm going to take exception to the Never on Sunday being also described as such. Much as the band rocked up Rock and Roll Waltz, which we heard earlier when they were the Majestics, they took an equally innocuous song and, in this case, space rocked it.
I thought love was only true in fairy tales.
Join the Vinyl Garage next week when the story of the Baskerville Hounds continues. There you have it, a perfectly good hour of your life listening to me. The Vinyl Garage applauds your discerning taste. Questions, comments, undying allegiance, or complete disdain can be directed at vinylgarage@oh.rr.com or Facebook/Vinyl Garage Show. So until next time, this is Dave Nelson. As always, thanks for listening. Right, since you've been out there, I'll be on the sheet or something.